with Arcand, Mego, and Shime. Now, WEEI Football Sunday.
Good morning. Welcome in. It's WEEI Football Sundays. You heard the big voice guy just say, I'm Christian Arcand, Megan Ottolini, Chris Shime in studio as well. A big Sunday here for your New England Patriots. A chaotic week down in Foxborough with a whole lot of things being said, things being scrubbed. It's been a wild week. We have Nick Fitzy Stevens, who will be calling in. Tom E. Kern as well. We do not have Wiggy's keys to the game today, which I'm devastated by the way. I mean,
sorry, they were too busy driving around in fancy cars down in Newport.
Right. Yeah, okay. Sorry. I was hanging out with Jay Leno. I couldn't get my keys to the game.
Jay Leno, really nice week. Guy, by the way.
Yeah, seemed like it.
Super nice guy.
I listened to that
not
whole thing.
Not if you're
thing.
Conan O'Brien.
That's true. True. He probably doesn't like him too much, but I thought that was very guy. I enjoyed his bit a lot. That was good stuff there. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. We are here to talk about football. And there's football on right now, as a matter of fact. Vikings and the Jets. We'll keep you updated on what's going on in that game. We'll make picks for the other games over the course of the show today. A packed NFL Sunday. A lot of good matchups that we will certainly get to. But we start right here with the story of the week, the word of the week. The word of the week is mutiny, and that's a word that's been scrubbed off of the website. It's a word that's been walked back on other radio stations by Evan Lazar, who you just heard there. It is a word that I loved, by the way. When I heard it, I thought, oh, this is good. This is juicy. This is a sexy story right now, and it was a little too sexy for the Patriots, who had it censored, and really, I think showed their hand with that, because if they hadn't done anything, if they had just left it up there, most people wouldn't have heard. You know, like, no offense to that show or to anybody's show, but most of the people who are Patriots fans probably wouldn't even know about it. And I think that's the point here, is that they made it much, much worse. The cover-up much worse than the crime, and I think that's where we have to start right now. This game, I think, is much more important than it would have been if that mutiny stuff didn't happen, because now, if you lose this game, that's all coming back, and it's going to be roaring next week. If you win the game, you can shut it up for a little bit. But if you lose this game to a Dolphins team with no quarterback, the mutiny stuff's going to get much, much louder.
Yar, first of all. So, Arcand. Yar-can. Do you include Evan Lazar himself as part of the Patriots organization when you say Patriots censored this? Scrubbed it from the record?
No, I'm saying they censored him.
So I don't think
he censored it.
I think I would allow for the possibility that he might have said, hey, maybe we take that down, when he saw the kind of response that it was getting very quickly online. Like, I would say that is...
You don't think the Patriots would see that and also agree that we should take it down?
There are both possibilities. I'm just saying, I also wouldn't be surprised, I was talking to Shime about this before the show, if he looked at it and went, oh, holy crap, I didn't realize that take came off the way that it came off, and he knows he works for the team. So... either way, it's either self-censorship by him going, I don't really want that take out there because I work for the team and that's a certain look, or the team, which is much worse. I agree, Arcand. If the team looks at it and goes, what the hell is this? get this off the internet. Of course, you put something on the internet, it's there forever. All that to say, I think it's no secret that this team is having major struggles early. I don't think it was a happy locker room after that loss. How
it
could
definitely
it be?
Wasn't.
You could see with your own eyes that Pop Douglas, not happy with the situation that he's in, you know, when he's coming off in his sophomore season and wanting to have stats that he doesn't have right now, wanting to get the ball, a helpless receiver, essentially, because the guy who's playing quarterback isn't able to get the ball to him or most of the other guys on the team right now. So, like, I get the frustration. This game is so important to getting that locker room right. It's the only chance you have at a, quote, get-right game this entire season. I mean, the wins are not everywhere. The wins are very here
Shot
and there.
Shot at Tommy Curran right there.
Maybe just one, two. That was last year. That was a different team. One, two,
quote,
three.
As we've learned, quotes hang in the air, though. They don't go away very easily, despite when they try and scrub
no,
them.
No, the wins are just, they're going to be hard to come by, and a get-right game, like, this is the only shot that you have.
Yeah, this is the best opportunity to get-right game. I do think there's other winnable games coming up on the schedule, but I just think overall, like, all of this seems very soft to me. Like, you come out and you say, first of all, he said, it feels like they're teetering on mutiny. He didn't outright say there's a mutiny. He didn't outright say players are revolting or being insubordinate, even though we can see with our own eyes and hear with our own ears that Pop Douglas, Jalen Polk, unhappy. Like, it's, I feel like everybody overreacted within the Patriots organization, whether it was Lazar that took it down or the team that took it down, everybody kind of overreacted to it when all they could have easily. It was a great opportunity for Gerard Mayo to take it, slap it up on the wall, and say, "Guys, this is what our own employees are saying about us. Like, people think that we are losing the locker room, that we're falling apart. Let's prove them wrong." And instead, you pull it down, you scrub it, and you make this huge commotion about it when it didn't need to be. It could have been like a stepping stone where, like, you know, Belichick famously uses that Philadelphia Eagles already planned their parade route before right. the Super Bowl. Like, use it as momentum. Use it as inspiration. Use it as just motivation. And they did none of that.
No, they really didn't. And this is the type of thing where I certainly could see someone pulling Lazar aside after the show and saying, "Hey, you know, that's not really," or after the thing even started going viral and just saying, "Hey, you know, be careful what you say out there. These things, people latch on to them. It's a vulnerable time for the team right now," which is why this is all happening the way that it is. I mean, really, if the team was 3-1 and you said something like that, or even if they were 2-2, this wouldn't be a big deal. This cut close to the bone, and that's, I think, why the Patriots got so up in arms about it. Now, Mega, when you talk about maybe Lazar did a little self-censoring here, we've all probably had takes that we thought about and we're like, "Yeah, maybe I took that a little far.
Tweet and delete."
Right. Maybe I exaggerated a little bit, and that's something that happens. I mean, it's a talk show. It's a live talk show or a podcast or whatever. This is the way these things go.
And
sometimes
we're emotional
that
beings.
Happens. And it's an emotional season too, by the way. All right? We're early on in the season. We're a month in with all these new people. The whole thing is with this coach is about the message and motivation and basically all these things that can't happen in the middle of a mutiny, right? Like, that's sort of the whole point. I think this game and this week has the potential to be a referendum on Gerard Mayo and his entire culture and the way that this is all sort of going right now, because we know that the crafts are sensitive, all right? Whether it's Belichick's the coach or Mayo's the coach or Pete Carroll or whoever, we know that the crafts are very sensitive, their antennas are up, and they don't like stuff like this, and that's sort of, you know, the company line with people like Stacey James and other people like that. So, like, I understand how they would react to something in the media like that, especially their arm of the media. But this thing took on such a life of its own that all the early reaction to it that you mentioned, Mego, was dwarfed by what happened after that.
Oh, yeah, because it looks like, on its face, again, we don't know all the facts, but it absolutely looks like the team took it down. It absolutely looks like they go, "Oh, my God, we can't have Evan Lazar out here in our studio at Gillette talking this way." Like, it absolutely looks that way. I also say, like, you talk about how sensitive or vulnerable a position that the crafts are in, that the entire coaching staff is in. It's also guys in that locker room.
Yeah.
I mean, there's guys in that locker room who saw that and reacted very badly to it.
They had a mutiny.
Well, there's guys, I think, that like very, very strongly have Jacoby Brissett's back. And I don't know if I wouldn't say that's a situation where there's like a firm split in the locker room the way that there were reports over Zappe and Mac Jones last year. I don't think it's like that, because everybody's aware of this plan that Drake May is on. But I do think that there's a lot of guys in that locker room who go, "Jacoby's getting the crap knocked out of him every single week, and he just keeps getting back up, and he's kind of a sacrificial lamb out there. And now there's this stuff out there about we're mutinous because we want Drake May to play so badly." There are guys in that locker room who don't feel that way.
So,
like, who are just like, "This, we're going to ride with our starting quarterback and don't talk about it that way because we're not presenting it that way."
I get that, but at the same time, like, Lazar didn't single out the people who wanted Drake May to play. Like, he said offensive guys are mad at offensive guys,
right.
Defensive guys are mad at defensive guys, which goes back to the Devon Godshaw comments earlier this week on our show.
Later on, he goes to say, you know, like, sure, why isn't Drake May out there getting the crap kicked out of him when everybody else on the team is willing to
sure,
do it?
That's
just because he's the number 3 overall pick. He took it there at the end,
yes,
which is where it's different. Because if you're just saying, "I went in there after a bad loss, the offensive players were mad at each other, the defensive players were mad at each other," then it's like, yeah, it's a locker room after a loss. That's yeah, kind of how it
is. And they're 1-3. They're not like 3-1.
Yeah. Yeah. The only twist to that is sometimes they're looking across the room going like, "Wow, the offense really crapped the bed."
Like last year, which
exactly,
is when that happened after every single game, basically. And this defense is going, what do we have to do? Shut them out every week? Like they said that. So, you know, that's not what's happening here. I think, yeah, there's a lot of finger pointing, obviously, but it's by unit. I think it's like, you know,
infighting.
Thank you. I couldn't think of that. But yeah, that's what you're looking at right now. And that's a bad place to be in. And you have a team coming to town right now in the Miami Dolphins who somehow Vegas and the rest of the world thinks is in worse shape than you are. And they're not having a mutiny, I don't think. I mean, Tyreek Hill's freaking out on the sideline. And you can tell by his body language that he's not happy with the way things are going here with this quarterback and the offense and sort of everything really surrounding that. And that's not a guy that you necessarily – like, we talk about Pop Douglas being upset. You know, like Pop Douglas is upset that he's not getting the ball.
Who then also went on an apology tour.
That's true, he did. And I'm sure like KJ Osborne.
Like, you know what I should not have done? Stomp my feet.
Has Jalen Polk walked it back though?
Jalen Polk?
Yeah, because he visually threw a tantrum like on the sideline during the game. Has he walked anything back? Has he said anything? Because he shouldn't. Like, that's the other thing too. I don't think these guys should walk this back. Like, I understand why they're frustrated. You can't throw the football. This offense is inept in the passing game. So I understand being a receiver, wanting to play, and being frustrated, especially like a guy like Jalen Polk, who by all metrics, at least all if you're a big nerd like me and you like the numbers, all metrics indicate that Jalen Polk is getting open and frequently. Like every time he's on the field, he is getting open at the same levels as guys like CeeDee Lamb and DK Metcalf. Like that's how good Jalen Polk has been, but he's just not getting the football. So I understand why they're frustrated.
Yeah, I get that too. I guess the point I was making here is that those guys being frustrated is different from Tyreek Hill and the Miami Dolphins and that whole thing. There's a guy with real standing in that locker room, a guy who they need to get going in order to ever win a game. I'm not convinced. Like, they fed Pop Douglas in that Jets game.
Yeah.
Right? And what the hell difference did it make?
No,
they still couldn't do anything.
They lost. They got murdered.
They don't have big-time playmakers on this offense, I guess is the point. And so they don't really have that kind of standing to say, hey, you know, give me the ball or else. Tyreek Hill does. And this is a Dolphins team that they're facing today who I think could be closer to that maybe than people are expecting. But somehow the Patriots still favored in this game, which I think is the craziest part out of all of it. What are we expecting to see today? If anything, we know that Ramondre Stevenson not going to be starting. That according to Gerard Mayo on Patriots All Access yesterday, I guess it was, or Friday. And other than that, it seems like we got status quo. Status quo at quarterback, wide receivers seems like are the same. Offensive line is going to be the same jumbled mess it always is. What are you guys expecting today?
I'm expecting a rock fight, and I know that's not a unique take. It's just what it looks like. You've got two quarterbacks on either side, most likely, who are backups anywhere else in the league. So I look at it as being probably a low-scoring game. Whoever gets the run game going is probably going to be the team that's in a more advantageous position. I'm interested to see them roll with Antonio Gibson because I think he's been underutilized so far this season. I think he's really good. And I think you saw a little explosiveness from him. I think it was in the second half of that Seattle game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just curious there. I do think we're going to see a lot of Ramondre Stevenson, even if he's not the one starting the game. It was interesting talking to him at his locker this week because he's kind of... His take, like, he didn't know that there was, he hadn't had the communication with Gerard Mayo that he was going to be benched or that was happening before Gerard Mayo came out and told us in the media. And so we then went and talked to him, but he was kind of like, yeah, I'm not surprised. Like, I'm fumbling every week. Is essentially what he's saying. But I think that it's kind of eyewash. Like, they're like, well, we know he's fumbling every week, so we can't continue him starting. But I do think you're going to see a lot of Ramondre still.
Just real quick, a little weird that he told the media, that he told everybody before he told Stevenson. Wouldn't you tell Stevenson?
I thought so. I mean, we went over to his locker. So basically,
maybe not the player's coach we all thought, huh?
We had the availability. Somebody asked him about it, and he said that, you know, he was definitely considering starting Antonio Gibson. I think this was Wednesday. And then we went into the locker room, went over to Ramondre's locker, and he was like, yeah, I haven't had that conversation yet, but not surprised. Like, this is the reality. He had a good sense about it. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't like, what? He was just like, yeah, I'm fumbling. What? I'm not like.
What? Huh?
To the point, yeah, where someone was like, do you think this is a mental thing, Ramondre? And he was like, I mean, no, unless you include me not thinking about holding on to the ball, in which case I'm fumbling every week. Like, he's pretty down to earth with this stuff. So yeah. I don't think it's like a cause for drama behind the scenes.
Yeah, for me, this is a 10-point Miami win. I think this is, you talk about get-right games, this is the Miami Dolphins get-right game. If Mike McDaniel is the guy we thought he was the last couple seasons with the innovative offense and the ability to be kind of ahead of the curve when it comes to motion and creativity, then this is the game he kind of puts his stamp on. Like, I'm not going to lose to the Patriots. I don't think in his coaching career he has lost to the Patriots yet. I don't believe that today will be the first day he does. He has all of the better talent, every one of the best players in this game belong to the Miami Dolphins. And all they need to do is run some read options with Snoop Huntley and get the ball in the hands of Devon Achane. Oh, by the way, Raheem Mostert's going to play in this game, Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, and they're going to win the football game. Like, talent will just eventually win out. And unfortunately for the New England Patriots, the game that you thought, because Tua Tagovailoa is not in, was going to be super winnable will not be very winnable at all.
All right, well, hold on. We got the emotional roller coaster coming up, and that's very similar to what we're discussing right now, although a bit more extreme with some of the topics there. We're off and running here on a Football Sunday, WEEI, with Christian Arcan, Megan Ottolini, and Chris Scheim. Chris Scheim has what's trending, and when we come back, we'll get to those poll results. That touchdown, by the way, by Snoop Huntley was their first touchdown in nine quarters. The Miami Dolphins offense is actually worse than the Patriots here, which is kind of amazing. It's Football Sunday here, WEEI. Christian Arcan, Mego, Scheim time, all in the house. We'll be talking with Fitzy live from the tailgate here in about 20 minutes. We'll get to the emotional roller coaster here momentarily, but just a couple of quick things. First of all, Aaron Rodgers is melting down in England right now.
He's got a tremendous
pick six against the Vikings. This was after the Vikings fumbled a pitch. It's been an ugly first quarter here.
Well, he looks pissed right now. I'll tell you what.
Yeah,
yelling at Hackett.
You know that he's going to be
16 yards,
blaming a whole bunch of people here. He's got two interceptions in the first quarter, including a pick six. That second one that he sailed to the safety was a brutal throw.
Yep.
And the Vikings are just all over him here to start. They're up 10-0 in the early second quarter. And that one didn't get picked anyway.
A little short completion.
We'll keep you up to speed on what's going on in that game, as it is the first of the international games here for the for anybody in the NFL, and the Patriots will be playing overseas soon as well. Also, there's the little matter of the line. I said that the Patriots are still favored. They are not anymore, as Chris Scheim pointed out to me. The line has now swung back. Excuse me. It opened up with the Dolphins as favorites. It swung to the Patriots. It has now swung back to Miami -1.5. And you think, Scheim, that is because of?
That would be Raheem Mostert being active and ready to go for this game. I believe that is what has swung the line back in favor of the Dolphins.
Makes sense.
Pathetic game.
Yeah, the mutiny.
That can swing it so far.
I mean, the guy did have 20
player,
touchdowns
sure.
I
last
know,
year.
But still.
Agreed. I also think this is the type of when this game opened, and the Patriots were the favorites, the Dolphins hadn't played yet, right?
Correct.
So they lost that game, or Miami played, and they were the favorites, and then they lost, and it swung back to New England, and it's like people forgot how bad the Patriots looked against San Francisco. Anyway, we're all expecting a pretty ugly game here, but Mego, your poll today was expecting the actual outcome. What is the outcome for the Patriots against the Dolphins on Sunday?
So I put this out last night while I was at a bachelorette party. The poll was, what's the outcome for the Patriots against the Dolphins Sunday? Your options, big win, 7.4%. Narrow win, just about 30%. Narrow loss, 24.5%. And season's over. Pretty much, why are we even doing this poll? And they're never going to win again. Got 38.3%. So majority think that it's going to be a loss and that the season's just over, so it's going to be a loss every week. I personally go with a narrow win. I know that the line has swung to the other side a little bit, and that's why I say narrow. I think this is going to be a low-scoring game that the Patriots are able to win, but it's not a pretty one, and it's not the type that you look at and go, oh, look, they put up 24 points. That's great. Okay, the offense, something's moving here. You know, you've greased the wheels a little bit. Something. I don't think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be just an utter slog where you go, I guess that was a win. Where is this team going?
Yeah, one of those wins where it's like 13-10 and it's just ugly and disgusting and nobody wants to really watch it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got my eye on.
Yeah, I get that. And
like
that's
one touchdown for the Patriots.
And if the Patriots can win, that's probably how it gets done. They're not going to blow anybody out anytime soon. I think Miami's offensive talent is too good. I still believe that Mike McDaniel is a good offensive coach, so I'm just going to take the team with the much, much better offense.
Okay, and you're taking them in a narrow loss, or?
No, I'm taking Miami in a big win here.
So okay, basically, season's over.
Season's over.
I selected season's over for the Patriots.
I was also part of that 38% of the season's over thing, because I think that this is the type of season over game. Like, listen, I'm not expecting much from this season, period, okay? I don't think there's really much to look forward to. I don't think, other than May playing at some point, I don't think really in terms of a postseason expectations or anything like that, it's unrealistic to look at it this way.
Special teams is doing a nice job.
They are. They're doing great.
Good job, Joey Sly.
And that plus $1.50 gets you the Boston Sunday Globe. But I think when you look at the whole thing that happened this week, when you look at how on teetering on the edge, I'd say, the entire, not just team on the field, but the franchises in general. I think that this is the type of game where if they do lose, it's going to carry in the next week. It's going to get worse. It's going to be hard for a first-time head coach to rein it all back in. I think that's going to be very difficult.
That's why
I'm going season two. I think they lose the game, and I think this loss is going to really echo throughout the rest of the season.
Sorry, Arkan. So I'm thinking about what you said, which is really the only point of intrigue with this season as we sit here in week five, which is when is Drake May going to play, and what's that going to look like, mm-hmm. and how different is it going to look? Do you think that the outcome of today's game has any bearing on what they decide to do with the Drake May plan?
Not unless Jacoby Brissett gets mauled.
It should probably.
No, that's but not I don't what think
I mean. Injuries aside,
no, I don't think so.
If they win, if they lose, if the offense looks the best it's looked this season, which is a really low bar, or if the offense looks more putrid than it has the last 2 weeks, does any of that have any bearing on what they decide to do with Drake May?
No, I think it's going to embolden them to keep him on the sideline. No matter what happens, they'll spin it that way. I think that's where we are. The only way you're going to get him in here is if something happens to Brissett. That's sort of what I've resigned myself to, and I think that's too bad because I didn't want it to be like that.
You could be winning football games.
To do this, maybe. I mean, you maybe could have won that Seattle game. Like, I don't know. Like, there's certain aspects of the schedule where you look at it and you're like, wow, this looks like much easier. There are much more winnable games on this schedule right now. You got Jacksonville coming up. You have games that you should be competitive in. And who are you more competitive with? I mean, yeah, you're right about that. But no, I don't think that this is going to matter. I don't think that this was supposed to be the game, right? This was the home game against Miami with no quarterback, and this is the perfect time to start him. And there's a month of Jacoby Brissett. You've seen all you need to see. Now you get the kid out there, and they're like, "Now we're going to stick with Jacoby Brissett. This is our guy." And that just showed me that the plan is don't bring him out unless you absolutely have to.
And it just infuriates me because I don't understand what plan you could have that involves this, like continuing to just roll out this slop every week on offense that's just not good. Like, everybody on the planet knows and can see that this offense is not good, and yet you have this third overall pick quarterback that you just refuse to put in the game. It's like, I understand wanting to bring a guy along, I get it, but you get to a point where it's like, the product on the field is unwatchable. A change needs to be made, and you're doing nothing about it.
I think what the only argument that I can really see on the other side at this point, because like you guys, I was looking at this game and next week as this is a nice little zone where maybe Drake, this is the earliest that he gets in the season as a starter. And it would make sense to me. And behind the scenes, it sounds like he continues to progress in a really positive way. And when you ask guys in the locker room about him, they are very glowing about what he's doing in practice.
Everybody
with the 30%
is.
Snaps. Like, I also wouldn't expect them to be like, you know, he's still pretty much trash back there.
No,
like,
but
I don't think that's going
to
happen.
You'd expect us to get whispers from somebody, right? Like Tommy Curran or Phil Perry or Doug or you or somebody. Somebody would
guys
have something.
Guys in the
something.
Locker room are very positive about him. Like, yeah. Very positive. He's doing everything he's supposed to be doing. It feels good with him there and everything. So I think that that side of it, it becomes increasingly tough to look at it and say, how can he make this worse when he's out there? Like, that's really the fear,
yeah.
Right? That if you put Drake out there, that he'll make the whole offense worse and he'll look like a clown and the whole franchise will look like a bigger clown show than it already does right now. Like, that's really what you have to lose. On the other side, I think you'd look at it and go, yeah, Jacoby Brissett isn't great and he hasn't been fantastically productive, but he's also not the biggest problem offensively.
Yeah, but he's a major problem. Like,
more that he's not the solution. He's not proving himself to be the solution to the problems that they have on offense, but there's no guarantee that by throwing Drake May out there that it doesn't look worse. And then it's like, wow, then you're almost facing, like, does this team have an existential problem? Because what if the quarterback is really not going to be the quarterback of the future?
See, it just...
I think that's what the scary part
is. It irks me because in my mind, like, the one guy that can look bad by all this is Alex Van Pelt. Like, if Drake goes out there and things go poorly...
Oh, I think Elliott Wolf can look bad.
Oh, sure.
Gerard Mayo can look bad.
See, I don't think Mayo looks bad. If Drake goes out there and isn't, like, great, I don't think Mayo looks
bad. He's the head coach, though.
Yeah, but this isn't his fault. Like, this is clearly... It is imperative. He has called Alex Van Pelt the head coach of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
If Drake May goes out there and struggles because the offense is just an absolute cluster, that is finger-pointed directly at Alex Van Pelt and Elliott Wolf.
But if guys quit, that's Mayo.
Sure,
if
yeah.
If guys start quitting out there and then the mutiny happens, I mean, that's on Mayo and his culture, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. But if the players are all behind May when he gets out there and Polk's like, yeah, man, like we're trying to do what we can for Drake, and the players seem responsive to the quarterback change, but the offense stinks, that the arrow gets directly pointed at the offensive coordinator and Elliott Wolf for being horrible at their job.
What if it's a situation like what we're seeing with the New York Jets right now?
Where,
Who just turned
it over on downs, by the way, after two straight interceptions. this is brutal.
Where it's just picks and picks and pick sixes, and it looks really bad for Drake. Like, doesn't that still reflect more poorly on the quarterback than on Alex Van Pelt?
Yeah, so that one would reflect poorly on Drake, but it would also be really bad for Elliott Wolf, right? So, like, that's the thing.
This is your guy. You drafted him, yeah.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I think there's
As soon as Drake hits the field, the clock starts for AVP and Elliott Wolf. Jerod Mayo's job is secure whether Drake May is good or bad. Like, Kraft is not going to say, yeah, I picked him 5 years ago to be my head coach and then can him after a year just because Drake May is bad. Like, that's not on Jerod.
Right, but I think, and I agree with that, absolutely. Like, I think Jerod's going to have this year. I think he's going to have next year. It's after that that you start
looking. It's after, like, year three.
If it continues this way for 2+ seasons.
Agreed.
Then I don't know how much, even if you're comparing the head coach to falling in love with your wife, there's a point where you go, we can't continue this way.
Yeah.
It's untenable.
Yeah, and there's obviously going to be lots of blame to go around here no matter what, I think, based on this season. But I think most of it, to start off, like, and there's a mutiny, someone has to walk the plank, right?
Yep.
Elliott Wolf, I think, is the first guy up on the plank.
100%.
I think he's the first guy up on the plank here. I agree with you that the Mayo thing is, he's bought himself at least 2-3 seasons. Van Pelt, I think, is probably pretty close. But even Van Pelt can look at and point to the roster and say, what am I supposed to do with this? What am I supposed to do with this
group? Put him in motion.
You know, like,
like,
I guess.
Dude, seriously. The motion is the biggest cheat code in football, and you do it at the league's lowest rate. It's embarrassing how vanilla and uncreative this offense is.
It you is could to the get, point where, like, when Hunter Henry moves, you're like, holy crap, what are they doing?
Yeah, but the thing is he moves and then stops again. Like, there's no motion at the snap. None. I understand Tyquan isn't good, but why he's not in motion 7 out of 10 snaps is I cannot fathom.
They're trying to motion him out of the organization.
Sure,
shopping him around the league.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fair. But, like, there should be. It's such a cheat code. Like, you could give me a Madden playbook and I could call a more creative offense than this.
Yes, it's funny. I actually asked Jacoby Brissett about that on Monday. I was like, so, you know, some people call your offense basic. It's me, obviously, but, like,
some people,
you know, high school offense.
We had the old hook and ladder play last week against San Francisco. That was something I was trying to say. Like, you know, you're maybe busting out a little bit, and I was like, "What do you think? Like, you think it's a basic offense?" And he's like, "No, like, I don't think so." He's like, "But what's he gonna say?" But I was trying to see if I could get him to. Well, we're gonna be doing more motion. We're gonna be doing more hook and ladder, more trickery, more, you know, Statue of Liberty, like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like that was necessarily.
He knows this offense is so basic. They're taking pictures at the pumpkin patch.
But that's why it bugged me too, because I think it was after week one, Van Pelt came out and was like, "Yeah, there's things on the call sheet that I really couldn't call that I would have liked to." And I'm like, it's week five, sir. Are you going to bust those out anytime soon? Because it doesn't look any different.
How about what Jerod Mayo said when we're talking about people walking the plank, Arcan? Mm-hmm. Like, Jerod Mayo's tune could not have changed any more sharply on the offense than it has over last week when he basically opens his first press conference midweek saying, like, well, now we know, looking back at Cincinnati, we know that that's unsustainable. It's like, really? Because I do remember there being, hey, it's your first victory as a head coach. So
and we're just going to keep running and running and running
the
ball.
I mean, that's what
you
told us.
We want teams to know we're going to run the football.
For the last 2.5 months, it was, we're a running team. We're going to be a tough, physical running team. And now we're sitting here going, well, that's not a sustainable way to win every week. And it's like, okay, so how else are you going to win?
Yeah, because you can't throw.
I don't really see other strengths of your offense yet. And we hear Alex Van Pelt say, I got to open the playbook up a little bit more. There's more in there. And I just am wondering what these other factors are that we haven't seen yet.
Like, I even think that you talk about walking the plank. I think there's a world where AVP is the first guy to walk the plank because
well, that's what I'm wondering.
Scapegoat. Yeah.
There's,
the easiest one,
well,
yeah.
Especially if, you know, when Drake eventually does hit the field, if he comes out and it's like, oh, he's talented, but the offense is still stagnant.
Right.
But there's clear identity that Drake May can play football.
And there may be coaches who want to coach him now, too.
Yes, exactly. Well, and you look at Elliott Wolf, you're like, all right, good job picking him at 3. You did your job. Alex Van Pelt clearly is not doing his job. Get him out of the building.
Yeah, I can see that.
How about this? If Drake comes in and he looks like Jaden Daniels looks in Washington, where you go, holy crap, this now changes everything.
Revolutionary.
Like, this changes everything. Does that make the coaching staff look better for giving him a little time to develop behind the scenes and jump onto the scene and look awesome? Or does it make him look worse because you go, why the hell wasn't this guy playing the first 5 weeks?
Yeah, we could be having a season right now, maybe, if you didn't get so precious with this.
Yeah, they could have looked. I mean, the AFC East is kind of up for grabs. The Miami Dolphins are horrendous. The Jets are struggling mightily. And the Bills are the only good team in the division. Like, you had a chance to actually, if that does happen, if Drake May came out and looked like Jaden Daniels, like, that would be an absolute, what the hell were you doing sitting him for so long?
But maybe you'd look at it and go, those 5 weeks sure made all the difference.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I'm sure some people would look at it that way. I probably would not. Let's go to the phones here quickly. 617-779-7937 is your phone number if you'd like to jump in and join the conversation here on a WEEI Football Sunday. Josh is down in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, how y'all doing?
What's up, Josh?
Doing great. I got a general sports irritance that's really bothering me, and I was thinking Megan Adelini for Megsplaining was the perfect one to talk to about this. I noticed it. I went to the Patriots-Saints game last year, and I noticed it, and I went to the Connecticut Sun playoff game on Friday. Mm-hmm. Why aren't they showing reviews in the crowd? I understand you don't want to sway the refs, but how is that fair during a challenge for the audience? I just don't think it's fair. I wanted to get your opinions on all that because it's been bothering me.
They don't show replays? I thought they do show replays.
So sometimes they do. Like, if there's a controversial call, they'll, you know, especially if everybody thinks that the home team got screwed, they're going to throw it up there.
They do that to sway the refs all the time.
I think he's saying that he wants to see what the refs are looking at on their screens. You know, especially a little booth or whatever.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
He wants to see what they're looking at up
there. And what
we're
seeing on TV.
Which I guess would be interesting, but I think you're pretty much seeing
relax,
where they throw
man.
The
just,
little
you're
replay
You're at the
up
game.
There.
Just have fun, you know. Go get another beer. Just hang out, you know. Like, what do you need to see? You need to watch every single replay? Like, you don't need to see all that. And they probably have other stuff they got to show up on the Jumbotron, you know. Like, people
ads and stuff.
Buy out space up there during the game. So that's probably why. I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. But that's my best educated guess. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. If you're on your way over to Foxborough today or if you're at the tailgate right now, you probably see Nick Fitzy Stevens, and we'll be joined by him here in about 5 minutes. We'll get his take on the vibe of the fan base right now as he walks around the parking lots and let you know what they're thinking and what they're doing and what they're wearing and everything else. I'm wondering what the fans are going to be like in this game. I wonder what kind of reaction they're going to have to bad quarterback play, to bad offensive line. Like,
I think it
this,
can get really ugly.
It could get very, very. This could be a game we all remember where, like, okay, like the crowd's had enough. Patriots fans have had enough. You start seeing some things you haven't seen in 20 plus years, really, around here, like that type of stuff. You know, it's been a while since we've had to go through it, and I think today might be the day. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Fitzy joins us next. The way this offense is going, that'll probably be in like a month and a half. Kendrick Bourne gets his first catch. He is going to be playing today, though, which is exciting, as we'll have the inactives for you in about 45 minutes. But right now, live from the Gillette tailgate, your friend and mine, Six Rings post-game show, Six Rings podcast, and you see him all over the place on game day. That, of course, is Nick Fitzy Stevens, who joins us on the line right now from the tailgate. How's it going down there, Fitzy?
Yeah, speaking of inactives, welcome to the tailgate, because, wow, what a difference a couple weeks makes, you guys. Actually, I was just asked by somebody if we could just keep our voices down. We're kind of like a library level out here today at the tailgate. This is, well, let's look at it this way. The Bruins signed Swayman to a long-term deal.
Sure did.
And the Jets are getting their asses handed to them. So why don't we quit while we're ahead and just say this is a big Sunday for Boston sports.
Win-win.
Andy and I have discussed, like, what if they just canceled the game? What if they just didn't play it? Like, would anyone be bothered by that? Would anyone protest? Like, I don't think so. Even the gamblers would be like, yeah, we didn't want this game anyway. That's fine. Let's just cancel it and move on to next week. Fitzy, I also feel like with the events of the week here, there's a potential powder keg situation with this fan base. And I know there's not a lot of people there right now, but the people who are there, they start seeing Brissett go out and continue to play the way he has the last couple of weeks. I don't know. I mean, do you get the sense that could they could turn on him today?
Yeah, today's – and listen, the thing is when and if they do – see, notice I said when.
Right.
If they do, and I kind of feel like the Foxborough frustration will play itself out, because if this team arrived today here, Arcan, 1-3, but they had showed the same sort of fight and kick-ass attitude, the barroom brawlers that they were for the first game and the first three quarters of the home opener, and they were still 1-3. But they came in having played like that. not having rolled over and showed their belly to the rest of the NFL the last couple of weeks, then I think this place would still be a bit more dynamic and electric, and I think fans would be ready to ride it out for a while longer. But the fact that we're watching basically a semi-pro team out there, I mean, you may as well have guys down here today like running tryouts for safety, offensive line, quarterback, running back. Like, this team is an absolute mess right now, and it's the fans, you know, they're going to probably take it out. So the grander point is, if and when you hear the fans get rowdy today, they're not yelling boo and they're yelling boo, or if they start a "We want May" chant, it's not a "you suck, Brissett." It's just, hey, we're not happy with the way things have gone, and you guys need to make a change.
Yeah, Fitzy, that's what I'm wondering. And talking to the fans around there, how much desperation is there to see May, just to see something different than what they saw the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, hi. I don't remember ordering this boring salad. I'd actually like a steak or a burger or something fun, please. It's like, yeah, it's Mego, I have a feeling they do want something different. But having stopped by like a dozen or so tailgates before we connected a few minutes ago, it is still split down the middle. Like, it is like half
really?
Of the people here are just like, yeah, no. Half of the people are like, just get May in there, please. Give me something to watch. You know, they're willing to ride with the lower floor so long as they get glimpses of the higher ceiling. And then there are some that are just like, yeah, I don't want to see this kid get killed, because you know what's going to happen? He's going to start developing all these bad habits, and then some new coordinator next year is going to have to coach all those out of him to get him back to his baseline, which they blew up because Vedarian Blow and the rest of the gang got him crunched.
Yeah, it's not a nice name really, for Vedarian, Fitzy.
I'm just bringing you what the people are telling me. I mean, I am not. Don't shoot the messenger, Mego. If you could shoot me, please, because I don't know if I can. I can deal with. I don't know if I can deal with Marlins 5, Red Sox 3 today. This is going to be. Do you guys hear Arkan? I know you talk plenty to Hart, and so do I.
I know. T's and P's to you and me.
Seriously, like, not all heroes wear capes, but they do talk to Andy Hart for hours at a time. but did you hear his? I thought he had a brilliant idea, and you know it kills me to my core to have to give him proper credit on frequency modulated radio. But he had the best idea. Today's game should be played like overtime in the NFL. First team that scores a touchdown, go home.
That's it.
That's a good idea. Although we may be there all day in that case. If it's first one to score a touchdown, that Snoop Huntley touchdown was the first one they'd scored in like 3 weeks. And the Patriots, I don't know. I mean, I'm not expecting much from them. The Ramondre Stevenson benching. Any thoughts on that, Fitzy?
Yes. Thanks for killing not one but two of my fantasy teams, Ramondre and. I mean, look, Antonio Gibson is a starting caliber running back. Like he's, I think he's been great in complement to Ramondre. But the fact that he, 4 straight games in a row, like of all the things that Pats fans keep saying, like, well, you know, back in the Belichick era, that didn't happen. The number one thing that I think we have just glossed over, and it's because of the talent deficit. Like Mego, what we talked about on the radio this past week, like the lack of star power, the lack of buzz, is the desperation for anyone on offense that you can cheer about. It was only basically sort of Ramondre. And, back in the Belichick era, you turn the ball over once, you're going to be riding pine for a few weeks. Turn it over twice, see you next year. The fact that he's fumbled 4 times and turned it over twice, I'm sure it was hard for Gerard Mayo to bench him just because he is basically the offense. But, you know, you have no alternative. What are you going to do? I mean, like, do they make him walk around the halls holding a ball? Does everyone have a slap at it when, you know, he's gone from the bathroom back to practice? It's crazy. But I feel like his fumbling issue and the fact that he's getting gassed is endemic of a larger problem, which is they have such a lack of depth and they're getting hurt at such an absurd rate. The attrition on this team, no starting safeties, a brand new offensive line for the 5th consecutive game. Your captains are going off at a rate like it's a horror movie right now. Like, this is such an odd season for me that, the Ramondre thing is just the latest in a litany of issues this team faces.
So, Fitzy, my guy Kostos was big on Jalen Polk's receiving prop this week going over. Is there any hope for that? Are we actually going to see some offense like out of this? Are we going to see any kind of passing offense that I should even consider betting that this week?
You know what I thought was the best? I heard earlier this morning on Kostos, I thought the best prop he handed out was Tyreek Hill over 0.5 yard rushing. Like, if you're Mike McDaniel And now all of a sudden, the calls are coming for your head, and all of a sudden you're not the wunderkind that you were a few weeks before Tua got hurt. Now all of a sudden, like, oh no, your offense, Mr. By the way, I would kill to borrow just a third of his pre-snap motion so we can run any on the Patriots. Honest to God, can somebody please just move the formation for the love of AVP, please? But the thinking was like, look, the Dolphins obviously, like, you know, Huntley versus Brissett, a matchup no one ever wanted. But if you have to do something just to light a spark or light a fire under this offense, just get the ball to your playmakers, pitch it to them, you know, run an RPO, something like that. So I wouldn't be surprised if McDaniel goes deep in his bag today to try to get Waddle and Tyreek and Jalen Wright and Mostert, who's back, who's had some success against the pass, to get them involved early, because that's the only asset they have on offense is their speed.
Just because we talked about offense so much, Fitzy, what do you think is missing on the defense right now, other than Juwan Bentley, other than Christian Barmore, other than Matthew Judon, who was traded before the season?
Other than Kyle Duggar, other than Jabril Peppers.
Is it just the injuries, or do you see something that is a bigger disconnect than from the defense that we saw last season and the season before?
I really believe. Look, if you're, you know, I know, we're, you know, I'm not coming to you from the SS Gillette where there be mutiny at hand. at the same time, I can understand the frustration that would be settling in with some of these guys, because defenders are playing 200% more playing time than the offense. Like, you know, the Patriots, as my old man used to say, like, get their lips blitzed off whenever they're on offense because the line can't hold. And then the defense is out there all day. They're, you know, it's 40 minutes to 20 minutes on average. That's beyond unsustainable for this team. And to be down your best defensive lineman, your best linebacker, your two starting safeties, there's a reason why they can't generate a pass rush now, because they can barely hold enough guys to have a starting professional defense. And then you've got guys like Josh Uche. Uche is what you say instead of Ole when he runs past the running back and doesn't set the edge. Now what happens, Mego, just like I was talking about too many injuries on the team because of the way they're playing out of sorts, you've got guys now trying too hard. So everyone's trying to do multiple jobs as opposed to just focus on their one singular job. Thus, you get some of these discombobulated messes like we've seen in the second half recently.
All right, Fitzy, we know you've seen, obviously, what happened this week to Evan Lazar and how his mutiny message got scrubbed. You've said a lot of words down there around Gillette. What's the most you've ever been scolded for something you said down there?
Oh, man, I got a call from Stacey James one time that was worse than any trip I ever took to the principal's office when I was in school. I mean, I got caught stealing Garfield pens from Caldor when I was 12. And that the talking to I got from the security guard at Caldor that day was nothing compared to the phone call I got from Stacey James. So they listen, they hear, they know everything. You know, I wouldn't be surprised right now if Lazar is having brunch with Dorito Dink and Matt Walsh and the Deflator and everybody else on a sequestered island. But, you know, it was an interesting point somebody made. I'll just wrap on this. It was an interesting point somebody made. I had never heard of this before. You guys familiar with something they call the Streisand effect?
Yes.
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it means.
That's not just putting Vaseline on the lens of a camera so somebody looks 25 years younger. Basically what it is when something happens and then you try to remove any and all trace of it. And
she was taking pictures off the internet or something, right? It was something like that?
Yeah. You create a bigger story by trying to make a story go away. Just let the story live. Like, okay, so that's one of your in-house guys. You know, maybe, you know, he has to sort of walk it back or whatever, but just sort of let it live. It's okay. But by redacting it in total from the podcast and from YouTube and everything else and making it seem like he's been sent to do 40 years hard labor in North Korea, like, makes a much bigger story out of it than it need be.
Agreed. All right. Can we get a score prediction from you, Fitzy?
Yes. Final score, Pats fans, nothing. Sadness, 20.
All right. That sounds about right. Also, go ahead.
I got Patriots 16, Dolphins 13.
Oh, wow. All right. Okay. Patriots win. There you go. Very good. And what jersey are you seeing the most of course? We need to ask.
The leading jersey today, believe it or not, Ben Coates.
Ben Coates.
Nice.
Wow. How about that? All right.
I have seen three or four vintage Ben Coates, a couple taped over homemade Drake Mays on Garoppolo and Mac Jones jerseys. I'll just ask the Patriots this. If you're listening right now, A, please don't fire me, and B,
Just please give the fans what they want. Give us those 90s, you know, early Bledsoe era throwbacks as opposed to the Pat the Patriot ones. I've been dying to go rock my Sean Jefferson and Vincent Brisby jersey at one of these games. Give the fans what they want, please.
Oh, very good. All right, that is Nick Fitzy-Stevens. Thanks so much for the time today, sir. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, I'll see you guys in the postgame show. And don't forget, I am dead inside.
Bye. All right, that's Fitzy. You can hear him on the Six Rings postgame show with Andy Hart right after this slog of a game here between the Patriots and the Miami Dolphins. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number if you want to jump in line. Coming up next, we'll talk to Tommy Kern. That's coming up next here on Football Sunday.